Snack Bar Games Podcast.
Welcome to Snack Bar Games Podcast, episode 233. I'm Graham, and this episode I'm joined by Henry, Chris, and Chris. How's it going, guys?
Pretty good, man.
This should be an interesting one.
Yeah. Some potential situations. Yeah. Yeah. All right. You know what, let's go ahead and jump straight into news. And Henry, you're covering the news desk this week.
Sure, yeah.
What's
so
going on?
We got a couple of stories going on, and I guess the biggest one that'll probably have the biggest impact the soonest is probably Battlefield 4, the announcement of Battlefield 4.
Well,
oh, this is the one you guys are doing the spec about, and then it was announced while you were writing it.
Yeah.
That's right. That's about that. I think you guys had pretty good prediction ratings on that one.
Yeah, it was like, well, okay. Spec goes live every other week at, 1 p.m. Eastern. And that broke at about 10:30, which was great. It's wonderful. It's like, why would they announce this game now? Right.
Maybe they just waited for your article to go up, and then they said, okay, now
it's
we
like
can
1:15.
It.
Yeah, come on. Come on, EA. Work with us. Gotta get them to agree to embargoes next time.
We had the one p.m. thing is because Rasko is in Texas, correct?
Right.
Is it just based on like noon officially?
Technically, everything is timed to noon and midnight, but our HQ is in San Antonio.
Okay.
So it's one and one.
That's what I thought. All right.
Yeah. But it works out pretty well.
Yeah.
So Battlefield 4, and the reason they're announcing it is because they're including with Medal of Honor Warfighter, which is still the dumbest name.
That's the first I've heard of that.
It's called what?
Medal of Honor Warfighter.
Wow, really? This is completely new.
Yes.
The sequel is going to be the riveting gun shooter.
Yeah, I mean,
I can't wait for gun shooter.
Next up, they'll have a porn star with the last name Sex Haver.
Street Fighter Fight Puncher.
Fight Doer.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so with that game that no one wants, they're putting a Battlefield 4 beta key in there, for people who buy it. And the beta won't happen for, like, a while next year. So, really, I mean, you said have the most impact the soonest. It seems like that's not going to have any impact for, like, a year.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a slow news week.
It's for me. It's more about the timing of the announcement. So, Battlefield, the gap between 2 and 3 was
huge,
years,
yeah.
Right? And then what this shows to me, it's like, okay, well, we have to do Battlefield 4 now because they're churning out a Call of Duty every year,
right? And they're not going to try to do like a third game in a rotation.
No, and they're not going to do Battlefield 4 like 5 years from now because they'll just be like, well, we're going to lose out on like billions of dollars because Call of Duty is going to get one out every year and it's going to sell like crazy.
Yeah, of course. So, I think the reason that Battlefield 3 took so long was, one, they were building that new engine, and I don't think they're running. Is Battlefield 4 a new engine? Actually, we know absolutely nothing about Battlefield 4, but I don't think so.
What's the new name?
Let's just call it the Infinity Engine because nothing's been called that before.
The whatchamacallit engine.
The Frostbite.
That's right, Frostbite.
Right, that works.
Yeah. I feel like, one, this isn't going to run on a new engine. And two, DICE is going to be able to focus a little more in this game because a lot before 3 was that they got put on everything. And, well, I mean, they did get put on Mass Effect 3, so they haven't had much time to work on this. But I don't know. It seems like DICE got farmed out a lot more. Like, oh, you're just going to do the multiplayer for every game that moves.
Yeah. That doesn't give them very much time to work on other things. Yeah, I can see that. It'll be interesting to see what they do with, I mean, how much of a change it is. Because if the game comes out in, I don't know, a year or less, I wonder if they'll completely revamp the multiplayer, because I don't think they need to. Multiplayer is pretty good. I mean, there can always be some tweaks here and there. But yeah, I have a hard time believing that they would have a new engine, because then they just have to basically start from scratch. Yeah. So I'm wondering if it'll be, you know, more maps, and I would think they would have to work on the single player, because the campaign for Battlefield 3 was a little disappointing for most.
Yep.
I'm not holding out any hope for single player campaigns in modern FPSs. I mean, unless something really, really great like Half-Life 3 comes along, which it won't, we're probably not going to see a whole lot of innovation in single player campaigns. But yeah. Maybe I'm just being pessimistic.
No, you're right, because I mean, companies will be like, well, how can we get guys to keep buying DLC? And it's like, well, they're not going to play the single player for hundreds of hours, because their single player is usually only 4 or 5 hours. So
right, and they want to fight turnover. And any game that's single player focused, you can finish it and then trade it in, and they don't really want that to happen. So
oh, that's a good point.
Yeah. They want everybody to keep the disc around and put it in occasionally. Or not put it in at all and just forget they have it and buy another one. That would probably be okay. But, yeah, it's really an incentive not to work on the single player. Also, DICE doesn't really do single player. So
no, not as much.
Maybe they should outsource the single player to another studio.
That may be a better way of doing it. Because, I mean, I don't actually even remember Battlefield.
Yeah, I mean,
Call of Duty, you can sort of do a single-player campaign. In fact, I like the campaigns from the Modern Warfare series.
Yeah.
Battlefield's totally different, though. Like, they tried to do the single-player in 3 to try and make it like Call of Duty, and it's just a different beast. Campaign doesn't really work with them very well.
Yeah. Yeah. But, yeah, so, I mean, basically, we don't know anything about Battlefield 4 yet. So, yep.
That's it, all right.
All right.
Any other thoughts there?
I think, what's the next item you got there?
Next item here, we've got Ratchet and Clank Full Frontal Assault announced for the PlayStation Network.
Yeah, so this is another one of their downloadable games. And it's being handled by Insomniac North Carolina, which is right down the road from me. But they handled Ratchet and Clank All for One, so it's not the main studio. And All for One wasn't exactly everyone's favorite game, but I think building off the main Ratchet engine that they're going back to now with the main camera, and then deciding to make everything also kind of a tower defense game.
Yeah, I noticed
that.
Well, that's, it does continue the great Ratchet and Clank tradition of making every game title an innuendo.
Yeah.
Hello?
Well, I mean, Tools of Destruction wasn't exactly that bad.
Maybe just the PS2 and PSP.
Yeah, I mean, there's
still a running theme.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I'm kind of interested in the aspects of that. Justin, who we keep trying to get on the podcast, but we may soon, is a big series fan and also resident tower defense guy. And when they announced it, he was like, "Yeah," and then the next announcement was, "It's kind of a tower defense game." I think we might have lost him for a couple of days just from the hemorrhaging. Anyway, but yeah, so that's coming out later this year. Should be all right, probably. Yeah, I don't know.
I find that out of all the genres, tower defense is easily one of the most accessible for new players.
Yeah.
And it also is. It's difficult to make it really fun, but it's also difficult to completely screw it up. So I think it could, you know, it's a little bit of a weird combination, but I mean, it's going to be on PSN, so it's probably going to be, you know, $15 or under. So
right.
it might end up being worth people's money.
Yeah. I mean, I think that tower defense at this point is getting to where it needs to be. For the longest time, it's like, well, it's a tower defense game. You buy towers and you place them. But now when they're realizing this is good as an element, this is good as an element of a game, and you're getting stuff like Dungeon Defenders, Orcs Must Die, Sanctum. I think the segments in Assassin's Creed Revelations were generally panned, but you know, at least they were trying something. But
sure.
Doing that where it is more of an action thing and not like, where I have to click this thing at this exact moment and do this exact build. That was kind of the problem with tower defense for a long time.
Yeah, it really wasn't very flexible in the number of ways you could win, right? It was, if you don't place this tower at this second.
Hey, right, I think the best way to go about this is to make a Ratchet and Clank game and then add in tower defense elements to it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, come on, Ratchet and Clank I mean, I guess with all the weapon variety, you could make an interesting tower defense game, but with such a big series for Sony, I think it would be a little bit shallow just to make only a tower defense game
right.
based on one of their big properties.
Yeah, well, in the release, they were definitely saying that they were inspired by games like Orcs Must Die, so I would imagine doing that. They're bringing back all of the weapons, but then also you're dealing with towers. Of course, the first game to really experiment with that kind of thing. I don't know if you guys played Ingersoll. You might have played Locke's Quest on the DS.
Nope.
Oh, I remember that one. Yeah, you're right. That sort of was like that.
Yeah, I have not done very many tower defense games at all. It just seems to be a genre I kind of stay right. away from for whatever inherent reason.
Right, but Locke's Quest was a game by the guys who ended up who had done Drawn to Life and ended up doing Scribblenauts.
Right.
And was yeah. So you built up defenses during the day. And then, like, they went out and you, like went out personally healing them and attacking and doing things you could to help. And that was really the first one, I think, to try things like that. But now we're getting some really nice things.
You know what? I always liked that feature in a tower defense game, because the worst feeling that you can possibly get when playing a tower defense game is when you're getting completely obliterated and you can't do anything about it.
Yeah.
Just having that level of intervention is nice.
Right. Yeah, especially when you get behind the curve. It's like, well, okay, I'm not going to finish this wave. Like, then I'm going to not finish the next wave, and then I'm going to not finish the next wave. So, great. It's fun. There's no way to catch up. But yeah, anyway, so I will be interested to see more about Ratchet & Clank. But let's move on. What's sure. another news item?
All right, we've got Capcom. Wow.
I think you meant Capcom.
Yeah. One of those Japanese video game companies. Yes. I think they made one or two Mega Man games.
Okay.
So Capcom
reveals.
Let's
save time and start calling them Capsule Computers again.
Yep.
That's kind of a cool name, actually.
I'm gonna call them Data East.
Maybe they'll do a retro package, and they'll call themselves that.
Yep.
Anyway, they revealed JoJo's Bizarre Adventure HD 2D fighting game will be available on Xbox Live and PlayStation Network on August 22nd.
Yeah.
I have never played that game.
$20.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird, as you can imagine by the screenshots.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's clearly a licensing thing. You know, because, you know, the property's pretty popular in Japan. They've still had a lot of, you know, games and stuff like that. And I believe there's a new full retail PS3 game coming at some point. Maybe not to the U.S., but that's been announced. So this timing is a little peculiar. But, I mean, generally, I've heard it's a pretty solid fighting game. I admittedly have not played it more than, like, once.
It takes a little bit of getting. I played a little bit of it. It takes a little getting used to if you're used to a lot more structured fighting games. But yeah. it certainly is fun.
So is Mega Man in this one?
Is retro Mega Man in this one?
Mega Man's not in anything anymore.
Is Juggernaut in this one? Okay, then I don't want it.
It's a fairly steep price for a.
Yeah.
For a PlayStation port.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it is being put in HD, but $20 seems like a little bit much to me, and it's 16 pounds for our friends in the UK, which is well over $20 for us.
Yeah.
Same with the Euro, so I'm not sure if that is quite a fair price for an HD remake, but
just because Capcom's competing with itself, you know. Marvel vs. Capcom 2 is available, Street Fighter 3, Third Strike. Really, for $20, that's a price to very easily get Super Street Fighter 4 Arcade Edition. I mean the Marvel vs. Capcom Origins Collection, which is Marvel vs. Capcom and Marvel Super Heroes fighting game.
Marvel versus SNK?
It's just the Marvel Super Heroes game that Capcom made before Marvel vs. Capcom.
Isn't that part of Origins? Yeah, I think that's just part of Origins, yeah.
Right, I'm saying that they're putting both of those together for what I think is less than $20. I vaguely remember like maybe a $15 price on that. JoJo's that's a weird. I mean, at that point, if you want a weird fighting game, you could probably pick up like Skullgirls or Is there someone who really wants JoJo's? I mean, is it $20? Because anyone who really wants it, I guess, would probably pay $20 because no one really wants it.
I guess they're pushing the HD remake angle. And the thing could be, probably the reason they're setting it high is that they know it's a niche game. So I guess they know the hardcore fans are going to buy it anyway. So maybe that's why they're pricing it so high.
I guess. But I'd love to hear from someone who actually wants that game explain what's appealing about it. But I don't think any of those people are here right now.
I've never heard about it. Yeah, so it would be all news to me.
All right. Let's go one more thing and then move on.
Sure. I would say probably, do we want to do Steam Sale or Deadpool?
Steam Sale just
Steam
ended.
Steam Sale. Right. And my all wallet right. is completely empty.
Yeah, I yeah. saw that. Didn't you buy about 40
Steam is
games?
Just mean.
I bought everything. There is... Yeah, I bought everything.
So not sorry, really, I don't have
but, that. I swear, I think my library like doubled or something.
Yeah, I managed to get out mostly unscathed. I picked out a couple of things this year, but
that's good. I missed the only one I regretted missing was Just Cause 2. It was on, I think, for $3 or $3.47, and I missed out on that one. I hear that's a fun one.
Judging by the voting that's going on right now, I think that one's actually going to be on sale again one more time.
Oh, is that right?
Yeah, maybe. So you may want to check that out after we get done here.
But in the voting, so
yeah. I've played that recently again. Actually, because it is one of the PlayStation Plus Ultimate Game Collection games.
Mm-hmm.
So I downloaded that, and then 2 days later, I could use my PS3 again. So yeah.
Every time me and my friend get together, we always play Just Cause 2. We play it for hours on end until the wee hours in the morning. It is just the most fun ever. It just really makes me hope that the next Just Cause is going to have co-op. That would be so awesome. A sandbox game with co-op. But unfortunately, Just Cause 2 doesn't have that, so we just pass the controller back and forth. But
yeah.
Still, it's a lot of fun.
I mean, Just Cause 2 breaks enough as it is with single player. I'd imagine the QA with dealing with co-op would just be... Like, what if people happen to, like, grab on to each other and, like, I don't I mean, that could be awesome, but, yeah.
That would be awesome. There's no question about it. Co-op Just Cause would be awesome.
Sure. All right. So I guess we can probably move on, though. Because, yeah, Steam sales, they're, yep. They're over now, so you're safe. All clear. Sound the sirens.
We're safe for another, was it, just under 5 months for the winter sale, I guess. So, yeah, we'll have some time to save up for games that you're probably never going to play.
Yep, and you just bought already.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. That was the main reason why I'm safe, because I was not safe in previous years.
So you still got, still got your backlog to go through, hey?
Oh, yeah. Backlog. Yeah.
Got Batman on the brain.
I don't actually have Batman in my backlog. Do I? No. Maybe. I may have the NES movie license Batman game somewhere.
The first good license games, I think, wasn't it?
Well, I mean...
Well, compared to... Movie license games.
Hmm.
Well, no, the first good license.
Well, E.T. for the 2600 was pretty great.
Liar. I'm old enough to have owned that, so no.
I own that.
I got
you're a retro gaming freak.
In New Mexico. That's where I got my copy. I don't know about you guys.
Yeah, I picked it up. I at a thrift store, there was a box of... Here is a bunch of 2600 games. One of them for $10, and there was like 70 of them in there or something like that.
Yeah, sounds about right.
So I got them. But I got together with some friends a few weeks ago, and they had never played it before because they're more reasonable people of my age. So I asked them, hey, do you want to play E.T. for the Atari 2600 just so from now on you can say that you have? So we did, and I sent out photographic evidence, and Chris Ingersoll had the appropriate reaction.
All capitals, why? Why would you? That's not bad enough that you subjected yourself. That you subjected other people to that.
I did.
That should be a war crime.
Speaking of playing really, really infamously bad games, me and that friend I was talking about earlier and recently beat Plumbers Don't Wear Ties.
Are you serious?
That was a trip. That was a trip, all right.
I watched that's one of my favorite Angry Video Game Nerd videos. I watch that anytime I'm feeling blue. It just looks so terrible.
it's worse than he described. I don't even know how they did it.
How is
it's
that?
Worse
how
than
is it
he
worse
described.
Than he described? It's, that's frightening.
It's because there's when you get right down to it, there's only really one way to go through the game. You remember all those other dialogue choices the game gave you? Like, it sort of led you to believe that there's a whole bunch of other options you can choose. Those aren't there. Those just redirect you back to the one it wants.
But thou must.
So it's really only a 30-minute game that you can only play once.
So you're saying the replay value isn't very good.
No, that's the one thing it could have possibly got right.
No. If it's really bad, it's merciful that it doesn't have replay value.
Maybe they realize that.
The problem is it has the illusion of replay value. So it forces you to play it again. Like, oh, wait.
No. You always have a choice.
Well, yeah.
Anyway.
No, not always. Sometimes you get a game like 999, they have to play again. But
yeah, that's true. All right. You know, let's go ahead and move on and talk about what we've been playing. And, Chris Domanowski, we'll start with you. You have been playing maybe Record of Agarest War 2?
Well, funny story about that. The entire time up to now has been spent downloading the thing. Due to the fact that it's 14 gigabytes and the fact that my internet has been extremely spotty over the past couple days,
Did you try and download the game while driving around a McDonald's parking lot?
Yeah, I bring my PS3 right in the back. It's like any day now, I swear. But now it's finally downloaded, and hopefully tonight I can start playing it.
Okay.
And I just have a week to beat an 80-hour RPG. This is going to be fun.
Don't worry about it. It's only 140 hours.
Oh, joy.
All right. So have you gotten to play anything recently?
Well, I have been playing Majora's Mask. I've been trying to get through that, and I've been having a lot of fun with that.
Was that your Club Nintendo reward?
Actually, no. I'm playing it on the GameCube re-release of it.
Right, on the collector's disc.
Well, let's not talk about those rewards.
Yeah.
It's more stuff than I remember. I mean, I always knew that it was a really dark game, but jeez.
Yeah.
Wow.
I never played Majora's Mask. Does it hold up pretty well still?
Yes.
Oh, it certainly does. Like, I just saw recently.
Hold up.
I just saw the Did You Know Gaming video on Majora's Mask, on the Zelda franchise. And, jeez, I missed a lot of stuff. The guy. Who made that game? I know it wasn't the same director who made the other Zelda games.
Miyamoto generally sat it out, but it was the full Zelda team, but they had like a little less than a year.
I think it had a different director.
They may have assigned someone as a director. It wasn't what's his name? Oh gosh, that's I feel bad. That's my
tongue. My tongue.
Anyway.
You can clearly tell a difference. I mean, it's completely different tone than the rest of the Zelda series. It's really dark, defeatist. It's just... I do like the game. It's an extremely well-made game, but just such a jarring tone shift from the rest of the series.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. That's going to be my next game I play then.
Graham, the name you're looking for is Aonuma.
Aonuma.
Yes.
Let's see if I can find it.
I can name every composer that Nintendo's ever used, but directors under Miyamoto I have trouble with.
Apparently, according to Wikipedia, which I just pulled up, Majora's Mask had two directors. It had Aonuma and also Yoshiaki Koizumi. So I don't know if he's a general guy on that or not, but...
I think it was Koizumi that took the lead. That name sounds a little more familiar when talking about Majora.
Yeah. But still, it's an interesting. I think the reason it holds up is because
it's just so damn different.
Well, also, it took an existing engine, and it didn't have to worry about building an engine,
right?
Or building really much of a world. It was reusing a lot of the same world, so they could just focus on game design. That was all they had to do with game design, which is great because they did it. They did game design.
Oh, yeah. I think another reason that holds up is that I noticed that in comparing it to the rest of the Zelda series, or at least the rest of the Zeldas at the time, the puzzles and combat in that game is really rewarding. I mean, like, there's a whole lot of puzzles that just require you to swap between a whole bunch of masks to complete, and the puzzles just feel a lot more satisfying, and the gameplay feels more rewarding than most other Zelda games.
Yeah. You know, there was something really interesting about that whole shuffle. I mean, these days the Zelda team is doing its back and forth thing that it does, making a console game, making a handheld game, making a console game, making a handheld game. Though right now, I'm not sure what's happening with that team, because it seems like maybe they're letting Grezzo handle some ports for the 3DS. I don't know what's happening there, but I know the first time they broke that cycle was with Majora's Mask. Instead of making a Game Boy Color game, they decided they could make an N64 game in the same amount of time and then let Capcom handle making some Game Boy games for them. So that became Oracle of Ages and Seasons, and we got both of those games, and both of those are really, really creative. Right? Yeah.
To be fair at that point, because was it really a cycle? Because didn't we only basically have Link's Awakening on the handheld?
Well, we had... I mean, they came back into DX, yeah. Yeah, no, that's fair.
Yeah. I don't think until...
Oh, right. Well, what they did that previous time was they did a whole bunch of Satellaview games in between Link to the Past and...
And there was a LCD game and watch thing, too, I think.
Sure. I believe that was a little earlier. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was not between Link to the Past and Ocarina of Time, I don't think. Probably...
I don't know.
I would love for someone to dig up, like, yeah, we had this Zelda Virtual Boy game in development.
I would like to see that. I would like to stare into my Virtual Boy for dozens of hours on end playing a Zelda game.
Yeah, really, the enemy, which one? The red one. They're all red.
they had like screenshots of people using their Virtual Boy in the park. Time.
Let's just roll with it.
What were you saying, Henry?
I was just saying it's so funny with the Virtual Boy. They had promotional pictures of people, like, lying on a grassy field, playing it in a park. Not that the Virtual Boy needed help going, you know, into the toilet, but that certainly didn't help.
Hey now, Mario Clash. Anytime anyone says anything bad about the Virtual Boy, I say Mario Clash, and then I say, besides that, yeah, you're right.
Oh, and Jack Brothers. Don't forget about Jack Brothers.
We can forget about Jack Brothers. Oh. The Virtual Boy? Yeah, we can forget about that. V-Tetris was all right, but it was Tetris, so you can probably play Tetris.
How many games were there in total for Virtual Boy? There were 16?
Hmm?
Was there 16 games for Virtual Boy?
Sounds about right, yeah. There were a few that were Japan exclusive, but the system's region free, so...
Oh, okay.
Never play Tetris 3D, never play the American release Tetris, because it's totally messed up. But V-Tetris, the one that Bulletproof, the original Tetris guys made for Japan, is really pretty good, actually.
Hmm.
Yep.
Well, the homebrew community for the Virtual Boy is actually pretty cool. That someone actually
is there actually a homebrew community for that?
Somebody made the first person shooter engine for the Virtual Boy. First person shooter engine.
I'm gonna stop with no. Don't.
Oh, come on, you gotta admit that sort of sounds cool.
I guess. I mean all the games are first person because
And now what is it, John Carmack is on that. Isn't he the one who had the new virtual headset at E3?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't think anything's gonna happen with that. I think that time has passed. If he needed funding, he was supposed to get it in 2009. When everybody was funding 3D and immersion and everything left and right, and now everybody realizes that doesn't matter. So, yep. But I'm finally starting to get into it now that it's clearancing out at like rock bottom prices. It's pretty great. Got a 3D TV. Yeah.
Is it are there any glasses free TVs in 3D, or is it
impractical. Yeah, I mean, yeah. You have to basically sit the right spot in front of them, so
I was just gonna ask, like, it works okay, like you can move around with your glasses and still all looks good?
Yeah, I mean, you have to keep within a general, like, window in front of the TV, but, like, with the glasses free, it's seriously, like, there's a seat in front of the TV that you can see it. Right. Or at least with a 3D, like, you know, you have a, like, you have about as wide a movement as you do in, like, a theater. But, like, obviously you can't go, like, extreme left or right or anything.
Sure.
Yeah. But, yep. Anyway, enough about that, I guess. Hey, Chris Ingersoll, what have you been playing?
Nothing new in the video game world, just Conquest and Lego Batman. But
yep.
Actually, nothing new in the board game world either, since my most recent...
There's nothing new in the board game world.
Right, because Gen Con is the Ether equivalent, and that's coming up at the sometime next month.
There's nothing new under the sun.
Right, but I did, as I mentioned in my previous gaming unplug, was just introduced to Medici on July 4th,
yeah.
Which is a game almost older than some people who may be listening to this. But it's really, really... simplistic bidding. It's there. You pull tiles out of the bag. You set a. You basically play a set of price from whoever wants the price, pays that many points, and ships them. And then whoever has like set collecting and things like that mix. It's really tough to explain verbally,
yeah.
Especially to non-gamers. But it is a simplistic game that basically anybody who's even remotely interested in board gaming who plays it apparently just loves it, and it. Caught me like in two plays, and
well,
I caught two more people when I got my copy and played it last week.
Just for you, I'm going to play the role of the video gamer who knows nothing about board games and wants to know about this game. It's set in Italy. Then
sure.
Do you get to stab dudes?
No.
Oh well, then I don't care.
There could be stabbing, but. It's probably not a good merchant tactic.
Can you, like, whittle the paddle? Maybe you can whittle the paddle down. Maybe that'll work.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. And then that, in writing my column for that last week, it led me to my topic for this week's column, which is on Kinesia's other big auction game.
Rah!
Which is a little bit easier to explain, but still not so much in text form. I mean, voice form.
Sure.
Because you pull tiles out of the bag, you have set bidding, things to bid with, and set collection. Three rounds, get points.
Bid on things. Don't bid dumb.
Right. Don't bid dumb. That's so much strategy involved that just can't be.
I mean, you'd be surprised how many people don't get that.
It's like, ooh, I want all this crap. I'm going to bid my 15 son. Okay, you can have it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're going to throw down the best piece in the game for that. Yep. Okay. Sure. Yep.
Basic gaming strategy. That's Ra's one of the classic, you know, quote unquote gateway games. Like yeah. Some new to board gaming, that's one of the things you can pull out and have a reasonable success at hooking them with. The Medici is, like I said, it's just basically bidding the game.
Yep.
So once you've got the basic mechanics of bidding down, you can go for Medici. But until you get there, you probably want to stick with Ra, where you don't have to hemorrhage points to pick up the stuff that you need to earn points with. Cool.
Yep.
But
so,
yeah.
I mean, so Ra is a Nietzsche title,
yep.
And that guy is like one of the most prolific game designers on the planet.
I own quite a few of his stuff and not enough of his stuff, frankly.
Yeah. I mean, he has some very serious crutches. Basically, all of his games involve getting as much as possible of a smaller subset of the things. And not the rest of the things. Those are useless or negative.
Right. He really likes to emphasize balance. Like, you need to have a balanced attack. You can't specialize or you get crushed. Although, oddly enough, Medici rewards specialization, which is weird.
Yep. I mean,
like Tigers and Euphrates, one of my very first gaming unplugged columns. You score your lowest point, your lowest of the four colors. What else have I played from him? Ingenious, a brilliant little puzzle, multiplayer puzzle game. Which is also something I haven't covered and may in the future when I get strapped for a topic. Again, six different
colors. It's a great game. It's always
right.
A great
and
game.
And your score is the lowest of those six. So you really need a balanced attack with a lot of his games.
Yeah. And also don't expect theme to have anything to do with the gameplay.
Yeah.
Ever.
I mean,
it's fine. I don't care.
Ra's theme fits pretty well. I can't, although I have seen, I guess, on Board Game Geek, someone has modded that into a Ragnarok. They Scandinavianized it, which is interesting.
I also saw someone mod it into ramen.
Wait, can you spell Ra just, and how many A's are we dealing with here?
One.
Normally just the one.
Only one? Oh,
it's
man.
It's the Egyptian god Ra. Ra.
Yes. Oh, I thought it was like Ra. Ra.
Only when you pull up the tile when you don't want to.
Yeah, sorry, what was that?
Uh-oh.
Can you repeat that for the podcast?
Ra? Ra? Just...
Like what you thought it was.
I thought it was Ra!
Okay. Hey, no. Henry, did you think it was anything?
I wasn't sure what it was.
Okay.
I didn't think it was I thought it might have been a cry of anguish, but I wasn't entirely sure. So I just shut up and hope I'll be able to follow along.
Okay. The Egyptian sun god / Sentinels of the Multiverse hero.
Okay.
Or maybe just an extremely short scream.
Okay. Ra.
Screaming Ra is involved in that game. It will happen.
Yep. Also chanting.
Yes, very much chanting.
Because, so basically, you know, once everyone's bid except for one person, so you're hoping that they get screwed and Ra comes up and the game ends without them being able to get stuff.
Everybody else is all, Ra, 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 Ra. It gets
Ra,
a little creepy.
Ra. Yeah, yep, good job. All right. I can talk about what I've been playing. I have been playing Tony Hawk's Pro Skater HD.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Tubular. Wrong terminology.
No, that would be Skate or Die HD or 720 HD. No one wants those games.
Sick grunt. No, just tell us about it.
How much of the original Tony Hawk games have any of you played? Like
zero.
Any?
A good,
about 2 hours.
I played a good amount of 2 and 3.
Okay.
So I haven't played one for a while, but I did enjoy it because I was sort of hesitant to go into it. I'm not a huge skateboarding fan, but I heard they're so well made that it doesn't matter, like most good games.
Yeah.
So I tried 2 a little bit, but then I played 3 for the GameCube a lot, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So Tony Hawk HD combines levels from 1 and 2.
Okay.
And it uses the mechanics from 2, which is to say that it doesn't have the revert that they added to 3, but it does have the manual that they added to 2. If anyone familiar with that, it basically means you can string together a whole bunch of grind tricks, but not really any sort of grabs or any sort of like air tricks.
Right.
It's hard to really talk about this game, and I had trouble reviewing it. I think it goes live tomorrow's morning, sometime this week. I don't. I just, sometimes
you have a lot of fire irons in the fire. It's
I do, but so the problem is this is the game that everyone was asking them to make, so they made it.
Wait, were they asking to make this specific like what they got, or just in general the theory?
Well, they were asking like bring back some stuff from 1 and 2. Depending on who you ask, they also wanted 3. And for people who want 3, they can hold out. There's a DLC pack that brings in 3 levels and brings the revert back only for those levels. But like they want the exact gameplay from like 2, but in HD with online play. And that's what they got. So like all of the things that are a problem with that gameplay, like the, like the glitchiness and the, like it's hard to say like, well, I mean, you wanted that, so you got it. But generally they still hold up pretty well. They managed to get a lot of the songs you remember. They only got one song from the first game, but it's Superman. So
I was going to say it better be Superman. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, now here's the important question.
Okay.
Can you still play as Spider-Man?
No, that was only in 3. With 3 or 2? Wait, it is 2. Three was Darth Maul. It's weird because Activision actually has that license, still from then they've been keeping it because they've been making a game every year. Wow. Sorry, it's been 12 years. Really should have lost that license by now. So someone can make a good Spider-Man game. So the roster they have. They put in Tony Hawk and Rodney Mullen and Eric Costin, but then they put in, you know, the problems with this game come from the fact that it was a small budget game. They only got one song from 1 and a couple songs from 2, but then they really just had to fill out the tracks with like new stuff. because it was cheaper to license. They got like a couple of the main skaters from the original game, but not really all of them. I know like Glifberg, but I don't have him. Instead, I have Riley Hawk, Tony Hawk's son, because that probably costs zero money.
That's pretty much your
avatar. You want to skate as your avatar? You can do that. You don't want.
Pretty much like every Crazy Taxi re-release ever.
Well, I mean,
music regard.
We have Superman, and you have a couple other songs from 2 that were important. I mean, it generally works out fine. It's just it ends up being kind of a small track list, so it starts repeating. Especially if you're going to try to play through all the levels to get all the goals with all the skaters, which is kind of the thing you do with Tony Hawk. Anyway. But yeah, so it has 7 levels, which is, I think, maybe the worst point. There are 3 levels from the first... three levels from the first game. The warehouse, the mall, and Downhill Jam. And then they have the hangar, Marseille, Venice Beach, and... Oh, gosh. I'm blanking on the other one from 2.
Oh, Grim, I'm very disappointed. You only remembered 99% of the levels.
Anyway, the problem comes from the fact that they just have those. It's fewer levels than have ever been in a Tony Hawk game, including the first one. And it doesn't have any like competition levels or anything to really have a change of pace. You're just doing the same goals, objectives thing. And then also there's online play. People have had issues with it. I haven't. That tends to work out okay. But there's no local play. And also, since there's no local play and they're relying on every game you can play online to be 4-player, they took out Horse, which was kind of, I think, the best. Well, Graffiti. They still have Graffiti, and Graffiti's pretty great. But they took out Horse, and they added in Big Head Elimination, where your head gets larger when you don't do tricks, and you got to keep doing tricks or your head will blow up.
Sounds, yeah.
Why? They also added a mode called Hawkman, which is like Pac-Man, kind of, because you skate around the level and you have to collect dots.
Is he being chased by ghosts?
I not really know.
Well, then why?
I mean, it's why all around. the game's really solid, like, as far as giving you what you wanted, which is, like, Tony Hawk skating in HD. It definitely could have been a lot more, and I think people are reacting to that. Either the fans are like, we wanted more of this, or the people who weren't fans are like, why didn't you fix all this stuff from 2? But that part is like, you know, that's exactly what you asked for.
Yeah.
And these guys,
what you wish for, right?
These guys have only made 2 really bad motion control skating games, and that's all they've ever done. So maybe this turned out pretty well, given.
Wait, they made a second one? You're talking like,
yes,
Ride and what else?
Shred.
Shred?
They made Shred.
Did that use the same board, or was that like a Kinect?
It used the same board.
Oh.
And it also added snowboarding in. And yeah, it was, yeah, I don't,
wow.
I mean, it was significantly better than Ride, but that's not saying much.
Damn it, with faint praise there. That's a textbook.
Anyway. Hey, Henry, what have you been playing?
I am currently playing, going through my backlog, Infinite Undiscovery.
They're great.
Mediocre JRPG from 2008.
Yeah, why are you playing that?
Oh, it's just because it's on my shelf and I got to get it over with. It'll definitely show up in Serotonin eventually, because it's a really good example of how a game can just sort of not be terrible, but it gets judged a lot worse than it needs to be because of what it could have been. Like, there's so much potential here. There's 3 or 4 scenes
that remains undiscovered.
That are really cool. That's exactly it.
As I told you right up front, what you were getting.
Yeah, limited potential, infinite undiscovered. Yeah. But again, there's some parts of the game that are really cool. You have way too many characters. I think it's like 18
Great.
Or 19. You don't care about any of them. But once in a while, you'll get 3 parties together, and you'll all be fighting the same fight, and sort of watching 11 or 12 NPCs engage in this sort of Secret of Mana sort of updated battle style is actually really cool.
Sorry, you said Secret of Mana.
Well, it's nowhere near as good as Secret of Mana, but I'm just sort of seeing that real-time action with better graphics and like 11 of your computer buddies sort of all wailing on the same boss is really cool, and there's no denying that. As for, you know, actual gameplay and story and characters, and that's all mediocre, and there are a few really annoying details that it's just like, you didn't need to do this. Like, you just put this in so you could try and differentiate yourselves from other games, and it just annoys. So, yeah.
I really wish that thousands and thousands of playable characters crap would stop. My threshold has always been like, all right, I have so many in my active party, maybe that number again sitting on the sideline. Chrono Trigger was pretty much 7 with 3 active and 4 not was basically it. I think the only time that threshold was exceeded and I didn't mind was Final Fantasy VI, the other game you talked about in your last Saturday call.
And eventually you do have to use most.
Right, eventually you have 2 or 3 different teams, which makes that all worthwhile. Plus, there were really pretty well-written characters, except the 2 main throwaway characters that were optional anyway, and Mog. Mog was kind of just there, but the other 11,
Have you tried Suikoden?
Yeah, I was going to say, do you have any opinions on the Suikoden series where they have, 104?
Just asking.
God.
108.
108.
No.
Yeah, that's a bit of a knock, but honestly, one is good, and 2 is one of the best RPGs ever made, as far as I can tell. But yeah, you end up going, there's like not only like a few characters that you never use or care about, there are like 70. That if you get all of them, there are about 70 that it's like, oh, I have no idea what to do.
Chrono Cross has 44 objects, 3 at a time. I mean, why?
Yeah. So I have to ask, since maybe you guys played a little more than I have, I've played about half of the first Suikoden game. Are any of these 108 the same in any of the sequels ever?
There's a few crossovers. There's a very detailed chart in Wikipedia that'll say all the characters' names.
I'm sure there is.
It's
probably an 800-page document of all their backstories. For the most case, however, no. The majority of characters, I would say, from my experiences, I've beaten 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, and the handheld one.
Tear Creeps.
There's not a lot of crossovers.
Okay. That's dumb.
It's nuts, right?
If you're going to have 108 characters, just have them again.
Yeah.
Import the save file. Just use all of it.
Connect them somehow, maybe. So maybe it's somebody's son or
cousin. Well, just we could take all of the character art and add beards to them. Now it's 40 years later.
That's right. Or maybe they're in a senior's home, so you can add walkers, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Or do the opposite. Take all the people with beards and take the beards off of them. That's what I learned from Fire Emblem 6 and 7. Just have the characters take or remove a beard, or in some cases, a mustache will do just fine.
Maybe a scar or an eye patch. You want to get really risky, but you know.
Yeah,
it's a lot. It's
just
a lot of characters.
Desaturating them too.
The reason they have so many is that I believe the Suikoden series is based on some Chinese folktale that very specifically has 108 people rising up against the evil empire or whatever. So that's they did it for the first game, which was cool. But then they're like, okay, well now we have to do 108 characters for every game going forward. And they're like, oh god.
Kind of ourselves into a corner here, didn't we?
They've made up, 700 plus characters at this point, and they're like, okay, character number 83 in Suikoden 6. What do we got, folks?
So okay, wait, we got this guy. His name is Scott, right? Okay, so what if we change that C to a K and turn his hair green, and now he's Scott with a K. Done.
That's right. He's totally different from the one in number 3.
He uses axes. Done.
Yeah,
I'm going on break.
They need Osimo the robot to come up with Suikoden names.
Anyway. All right. You know what? We should probably go ahead and move on to our main topic of the episode. Hey, Chris Ingersoll, you mind introducing our topic this week?
I could try. At some point, let's see when the actual date was. Was it July? I forget. Sometime a couple weeks ago.
Yes.
Graham tweeted.
It's my fault. It really is.
Yes, it is your fault.
The whole thing, all the right. $5 million.
Well, you brought to my attention.
Yeah.
This Ouya console on Kickstarter, which is billed as being cracking the TV as the last open platform.
Yeah.
Or the last closed platform, opening up the TV.
Right.
So what it basically is, it looks like very GameCube looking box that's running Android, the Android system for televisions. It's got a console. I mean, it's got a controller, which is a limiting factor for any Android things since they're all tablets and phones right now.
Right.
And they basically said, this is $100. Do what you want with it. Like, anything. Like, you can hack it. You can do whatever. Just, this is for indie gamers and indie games. And I guess they're going to have some big names on it, too.
Well, like, I mean,
in theory.
Big, medium names.
Right. I was looking at the video again today, and it was on the little menu mock-up. There was like a Madden 13.
Yeah, so there has been nothing.
Right. Nothing has happened with nailed that. Down, but it's...
Well, there is one thing nailed down, and we'll get
right,
to that in a little bit.
One thing nailed down. And one thing that appeared to be nailed down, but wasn't actually nailed down. But
there are 5,000 things that appeared to be nailed down that weren't actually nailed
down.
Right,
one very specific thing.
Yeah, maybe two.
There's... And it exploded. Like,
yeah.
They wanted $950,000.
Yeah.
They got that and change within a day. And now they're at $5.3 million.
That is,
wow.
That is crazy.
42,000 people have cashed in on this. They completely sold out of their introductory get an Ouya level at $95 that Graham and I both get in on.
Yeah.
And then all these other suckers.
Early birds.
And then another
four more dollars.
Right. Another like almost 30,000 people, 3,500 people got another one at $99. And there's a couple people who are willing to pay the extra $30 for a second control pad that may not even be all that useful straight up.
Yeah.
Early development kits. And even six people pledged at $10,000 to have their name etched on every initial unit they put out.
Though we know one of those people is Robert Bowling.
Okay.
Yeah. that's news we have. But yeah, so I'm going to go ahead and say, before we start this conversation, that yes, I was one of the first 1,000. I absolutely was. I would get it anyway. I'm... Like,
right, I've spent $95 on much more random things than this.
Yeah, like, I mean, I spent $70 on an Odyssey 2, so this is probably better than that. Because it can emulate Odyssey 2 games.
It can emulate anything you want on there.
I don't know, there's one thing that I'm still going to hold out for when I hear the specs of the Ouya. The thing I'm more interested in about the device is, yeah, it can play games. That's a really nice thing. But the fact that the XBMC Media Center software was just released for Android, really cheap $100 Media Center, and that personally really appeals to me.
Yeah, if nothing else, I'll like use it for like that. Like it's coming with Twitch TV, like already installed.
Yeah.
If that's your kind of thing, I've only used Twitch TV once, and it was for a Magic Pro Tour, which is I'd much rather. I would have killed to have had that on my television and on my laptop.
Right.
And if that will do that 4 times a year, then that's almost worth the investment right there.
Yeah, I mean, I like that, and I definitely think there are going to be more streaming apps to it because it would be crazy easy for people to get that going. I imagine someone will do something with YouTube, Netflix, maybe. I don't know. It really has to, for Netflix, it has to reach some sort of saturation point. But I imagine there's going to be, I mean, probably at least some sort of like enhanced browser of some sort. I don't know. But
Ray, were you surprised at how much attention and how much sort of positive reaction you're getting to the system?
You guys
donated right away.
There was a crazy positive reaction followed by huge backlash.
Yeah. Oh, is that
this
right?
It's caught a huge. It's and how many times in reading about the Ouya have you seen the word Phantom thrown around?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
so,
exactly what I was thinking.
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Of course, this is a little different because they actually have like
a prototype.
Real people there. Yeah, I mean, there's definitely like a prototype. There's UI. Like, it's the most practical thing you could design, especially. Like, that's the thing. With a lot of people, it's like, well, no, we're doing this like really cheap, you know, powerful enough, but not really that powerful chipset. It's going to be cheap to produce. We know we can produce it. We have the spec. It's good. We have the firmware running. We don't have the firmware own the chipset, but we're getting there. Like, I mean, it's like the most practical thing that you can make. It's not overly ambitious. It's not trying to get people to design a game where you simultaneously have like a mouse and a keyboard on your lap, but one, the keyboard is propped up at a 15 degree angle. Like, no.
Which I'm told is the only redeeming thing about the Phantom.
And the only thing they ever made.
Right.
You can order Phantom lap boards.
Although, instead. Like I said, it is a little curious, as reading some of the backlash, that we've never seen the left half of the control pad other than the,
yeah.
the mock-ups. So
they're not
I noticed
done.
That. Isn't that weird?
So they're not I mean, done, I've been... but I think a lot of the thing was, if you look at any of the sketches they're doing, and any of like the released images of the design team, they are going with an Xbox 360 style like analog stick at the top, D-pad at the bottom thing, which is really the only thing that isn't on that photo.
Right, because yeah, the only thing on the left is like triggers and the actual
yeah.
main.
And we know that's not quite the final design because they're gonna do something more with the buttons on the controller. I think like when
yeah,
they showed the interface, they had the mock-ups with the OUYA. I think that's fine.
Oh, that'd be nice because yeah, the circles is not gonna help anybody who's even remotely colorblind.
Yeah. So I think they can just put the OUYA on there. I think A should be the main button, maybe O on the left, U at the top, Y on the right, maybe.
But then it says, "Why?" If they make the A the bottom button, they can have OUYA just go right across and have the bottom button be your action button, which I guess is that how the Xbox is, where the main button is on the bottom.
Or yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
They switched the Super Nintendo button layout. So X is where Y is, and A is where B is, and vice versa.
Okay.
Yeah. And, you know, the PlayStation had always been like that in the U.S. and not like that anywhere else, but that's because Maru and Batsu and, like, that's how... Anyway. Dumb things where they made symbols for Japan that made total sense, that the circle means yes and an X means no.
An X means no, that's right, yeah.
That is the most counterintuitive thing ever.
Like, why did we not stick to that? Why did Americans not get... Circle is good. X is not good. X is a cross out of thing.
I hate the button.
Oh, sorry,
on
the cross button.
Right.
Yes.
The only redeeming thing they did, as far as I'm concerned, with the PlayStation, they put the triangle up.
Yeah.
Points yeah. up. That's the only one I remember.
Yeah. The square is also pointed
up. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I remember hearing an interview with the guy who designed the PlayStation controller, and they said that square button is actually supposed to represent a menu.
Yeah.
Yeah, or like a map button,
got switched around
or like a chart that somebody can pull out. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
But
that didn't really pan out.
Getting back to the actual OUYA.
Yes.
Now, I said this started for me. Like, say, Graham tweeted it on. I looked at it and I told him. You know, this seems to me like a classic case of Rejects Eating Grasp. And he said, yeah, they got some actual names. It's actually, I guess, Yves Behar is the big guy behind it.
Right, and he did the LPC, and he's done all the work for Jawbone, like the Jawbone Jambox,
right.
Things like that.
And then I poked around the thing, and I read it, and in addition to the price point, which is almost, like I said, it's a no-brainer. I spent $100 on much dumber things than this. So, I just looked through, like, I'm not usually a big indie game guy.
Yeah.
But if I own a second console for this next... this isn't even part of the actual console generation cycle. I'm just using this as a
right.
time frame. For the 2003X time frame,
yeah.
Having my second console be a little $100 indie box instead of, let's say, a $400 PlayStation 4 or whatever the hell they ridiculous price point they may release that at,
sure.
seemed like a really good
yeah.
you know, bet hedging type thing. And... I like the idea behind it in that I understand it can be incredibly difficult to even get your own indie designs on like Xbox Live or on like WiiWare. Almost nothing goes to WiiWare. That's
right because no one makes money.
Right.
Yeah.
And that idea that appealed to me a little bit because I've been playing like Flash games online and stuff, and I could see
right.
I know the mobile market is kind of going a little bit silly and. Bringing that to TVs maybe give me access to a few things I don't have normally.
Yeah.
But what really, I think, ultimately sold me on it is their philosophy of every game is going to have
at least a demo or be free to
right.
play.
So
right.
It's going to be free. So you're not risking anything when you're picking up a game just to check it out.
Right. And we've gotten some of that before,
idea.
Like XBLA
like
or what have you. XBLA
yeah.
only has the like demo, and you can purchase in the demo kind
right,
of.
And so even some WiiWare games have done. That's why I bought Fluidity, but
right, some, not, and usually they're like 6 months later.
Right.
Yeah.
But this is upfront. every game has some sort of aspect to it free, so you can try it before you buy. And that is, people have, again, getting the naysaying backlash. People are saying, that's just going to be a bunch of ports from cell phone games that are going to suck. And yeah, probably, but...
Yeah, some of them are not going to suck. But...
Right. And we're going to find the ones that aren't going to suck, and everybody's going to know about them because everybody gets to try them.
Right.
Yep. So it's if they come up with a consistent lineup of games like, you know, Braid, Limbo, Bastion, Shadow Complex, I mean, those are not just crappy iPhone port games, you know, those are pretty good. So if they can come up with a consistent lineup like that, I mean, I don't know how they're going to do it because they're going up against, you know, against the heavyweights, but I think the concept is sound, especially with the resurgence of indie games the last couple of years.
Yeah. Well, I mean, so let's talk about the lineup, what they have now.
One thing. But
one thing.
No, you're right.
But we'll get to that. You know, like the things that they have talked about, there's a whole load of developers that they are quoting saying, Ouya is a pretty great idea. But that doesn't say, like, we're actually releasing your thing. Like, you know, Cannonball is probably going to be on it. But,
right.
Like, it's not official. Minecraft, that was a big fiasco where they're like, Minecraft's going to be on it. And Mojang's like, Ouya sounds like a pretty good idea. That doesn't mean we're developing a version for the Wii.
All right, the Jordan Meschner says it's something that seems like a good idea.
Yeah, but that guy isn't making tiny games anymore.
Right. Like, that guy had a major motion picture made after one of his games. I think he's
yeah. We're not going to have Prince of Persia. The next Prince of Persia is not going to be on the Wii. Like, it's... Nope. Maybe Karateka. Should I have a seizure every time I have to pronounce it like that? But that's how he pronounces it. You know, like, I don't know.
Well, it's really, like you guys said, it's a very optimistic kind of game console, or at least its idea is. It's like thinking, yeah, we can do this. We can take standard debt and free make a respectable game console. And you know what? That's how a lot of systems have succeeded in the past. I mean, I'm blanking right now, but still, you can see how it's a sound idea.
Yeah. No, I mean, really, they're not overly ambitious. The thing is that they have the right amount of ambition. That they're, you know.
Besides the fact that they pretty much already have the support of every Android game that supports a Bluetooth controller.
Yeah, I mean, there will have to be some work done.
They have to realize that have to realize that the thing that'll make or break their system is obviously software support. So now that they've got the hard, you know, sort of do what Sony did. And before the launch of the PlayStation, just use every resource you possibly can to get developers developing for this thing, because that's what's going to sell it.
Well, that's the other interesting thing about this, as far as I could tell, is I am not a game designer in any way, shape, or form. I'm more of a game consumer. But every off-the-shelf Ouya is also a developer kit.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to ship out some advanced developer kits, so they can have some stuff at launch. But... once you have the thing, you can basically start working on your own stuff for it, which I'm not, like I said, I'm not one of those people, but I know a lot of people are.
And you can get a lot of things. If your ambition is small, if you make a really good small thing, then that's enough. You don't have to make it huge, you know, and you don't have to charge that much for it either. But you can make a home game, as long as it's something within your skill level that you could put immediately on a TV.
One of the other guys they have talking about is the guy that made, like, Flow.
Yeah, Genova Chen. So we're not getting Journey on this thing, but he likes the idea of it.
All right. That said, things we are and we are not getting, they had a survey, I guess, on SurveyMonkey that you could suggest games you would like to see on it. I went in there and some part of me really, really wants a video version of the board game Android running on the Android system. I don't know why. I just want that to happen so bad because it's just perfect. So I could actually not have to specify when I'm talking about one or the other. But some people who are submitting to these things have no grasp of reality.
Yeah. So, you know, I went in too and I was like, it was like, you know, here, put in five games you really want to see. And I kind of did this research and mainly I was looking at one, like, tiny games that have maybe hit like Steam or Xbox Live Indies and really not gotten much attention. And then I was looking at like phone games that really deserve controller support, you know? Mm-hmm. And I was like, here are some reasonable things. I was trying to give them actual suggestions. And the survey came back. It's like, hey, we want Call of Duty and Battletoads. Battletoads is number 4 on that
right.
list.
Yeah, I saw
what?
That.
Like, it was a list of like, yeah, we want Assassin's Creed.
Everyone
wants
Battletoads.
We want Assassin's Creed and Batman and Modern Warfare and Battletoads. And like, it's just like, what? How is Battletoads on this list? But we're not going to get Battletoads.
No.
Like, obviously, there are definitely people who are paying for this thing who are going to be phenomenally disappointed.
let me pull up this list real quick.
Sure.
Let's see. Super Meat Boy is something that could, in theory.
Yeah.
Bastion. But then there's stuff, Skyrim.
Yeah, no.
Really?
No, you're not Skyrim. I mean, the best stuff people can really, at least early on in the cycle, if they want like a polished experience, what they really should be hoping for is like some like Gameloft stuff, maybe, because they've done some pretty solid mobile ripoffs of full console games. Like, yeah, they had this game. It's kind of like, gosh, what was the? There was something they put together that was a lot like Zelda.
Better,
yeah.
Xenonia.
Hmm. Oh yeah, yeah.
Is that
was
Xenonia.
Well, Xenonia is, I mean, yeah, that's...
Like, you know, it'd be a good idea.
Yeah, like, it would be like...
Release.
I think I put Xenonia on my list, actually. It's like, that makes sense. Like,
you know,
your game is like Xenonia. Into the past, you know?
Huh? I played Xenonia. I wouldn't put it on my list. But it's actually available in the DSi shop.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that version is really bad, but they have Xenonia 4 now or something. They've gotten pretty far along with making that better, and also if they had the controls work, then like maybe
I submitted my Club Nintendo post play survey on, I said you could tell this was made for a phone.
Yep.
Because it has no business having some of the control inputs that it has, and the UI is actually going to some sort of touchscreen on the console, on the controller, in theory, for like any kind of swipe gestures you need. I imagine it's not going to be like an actual display, because that seems like it would be prohibitively expensive, like a mini Wii U gamepad. But just for inputting touch controls, and that's, I'd almost rather they didn't have that at all.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out, because they said some developers we're working with asked for that, and we seemed like it was, and we thought it was a good idea. I'm trying to figure out what that is. Like, I have no idea. Anyway.
Is there, when you guys sign up for Kickstarter, I haven't done one myself, is there any obligation at all from the company you're donating to?
No, sadly.
No.
I know somebody will say you'll get a free like swag or something like that, or if the game gets made, your name might be in the credits or something like that.
Right.
But in terms of if the game never gets made, do you get your money back?
No.
No, okay.
No.
And that's kind of the danger of that, but...
Sure.
But
you know,
that's
you know
why
the risk
a lot
going
of the
in.
Things you're doing is you're dealing with established companies and things like that.
Yeah, fair enough.
Yeah. Anyway,
it's a gamble.
So,
and if that does get made, that'd be pretty cool, right? I mean, if the game ends up being really good and you'd be like, oh, I'm really happy I made that happen or I was a part of that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
very cool. But so let's talk about the one game that we actually know that you guys are going to get, because we know it. So Robert Bowling, who I mentioned earlier as being one of the huge $10,000 contributors, who was the community director for Call of Duty, left recently, and he's been working with his studio on this game that's coming out in 2015 called The Human Element, which is basically this story-driven game set in like a zombie apocalypse, which, as it turns out, we have that already, but it would be interesting to see what happens. But so he has announced that he is – it's unclear whether like – Ouya's helping to fund or something like that. But, you know, so he's doing this episodic game that will at least premiere only on Ouya, which will be this story-driven – we don't know much about it yet, but we do know that his studio, Robotoki, is making a game, like, actually. I don't know. That didn't seem like something I'd be too excited about, but I'm excited that, like, they – have made a commitment that someone is going to release a game for this thing.
Right.
Anyway.
Baby steps at this point, right?
I mean,
it's better than no games being announced at all.
Yeah.
Right. And the other interesting thing you I mentioned that it exploded like in the first couple of days.
Yeah.
Like crazy untold like $3 million out of their 950,000. Yeah. There's still 17 days to go on this.
Yeah.
And but they haven't done that. A lot of other Kickstarters I've seen, there's no stretch rewards or anything on this yet.
Yeah.
But traditionally, the last day or two of a Kickstarter is usually a huge spike in funding. So I'm actually curious to see where this lands.
Yeah. And it is important to keep the expectations low because...
Oh, yeah.
I mean, even... sorry. even with the amount of support it's getting, it is like... Like, the number of people who have bought one of these systems now is, you know, what, less than a tenth of the people who own a Vita right now? And that's a, like, phenomenal failure in the video game industry right now. So, you know, that part is kind of tough. But I do think, and you know, you'd mentioned it earlier, was that how this is kind of a phenomenon of the console cycle right now, are really just not getting a new system, and we, like, everybody kind of wants one.
Yeah, it was interesting. I always said, like, I wish that the console generations would last a little bit longer, because, you know, then companies will have time to, you know, eventually bring out a lot of high-quality titles, because they'll be used to developing for the system. And I never thought we'd be there, but it seems like we're at that point, right? And it seems like developers are just starving for the new consoles. But I don't know if and you're seeing a lot of hesitation from Sony and Microsoft, because it's like, well, all right, but when it comes out, it's going to be $600 or whatever, and no one's going to want to buy that, especially if we don't have any games. So
right. Sony saw firsthand how that worked.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, their launch was atrocious, and normally I don't really pay too much attention to launches, but that cost them, it took them a while to catch up. So yeah, it's an interesting spot, because I don't think they have a lot of confidence that consumers are going to want to plunk down a good amount of change for a new console yet, but it's like, well, we really have nowhere else to go.
I really just am not sure if when new consoles are announced, they're going to be what people want, per se, is to buy a new system, because I think a lot of what is going to be announced is that it's going to be like a slightly upgraded power-wise version of the thing they already have.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think the reason that people are excited about something like an Ouya is that it's a different thing. It's not going to be like slightly upgraded what you already have. It's not going to be, oh, okay, where I'm going to get the next Halo. I'm going to get the, like, I mean, while people love those things, it's not exciting. It's not different. It's not like, you know, when the original Xbox came out, it's like, hey, Microsoft's going to make a whole system. And I mean, it was really, really bad for a while there, unless you really like Blinks the Time Sweeper. But, you know, we don't have like, you know, everybody wants the Dreamcast to come back. Everybody, you know, there was a huge uproar when somebody thought this little licensed, like, MP3/media player thing with Neo Geo ROMs on it was a new Neo Geo Pocket. Like, people just want something that is not the thing they have right now, or slightly upgraded version of the thing they have right now. And this is kind of it, but, like, I don't think, like, oh, hey, we get PlayStation 4. I don't think that's going to get the same amount of excitement unless they release some cool game. But I don't know if they're doing that, because, you know, like, I mean, maybe I'm really hoping there are a lot of new, like, there's new IP in development that they're just holding on to. But, I mean, they're really stretching out the stuff they have right now. And I think that's adding to the problem.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree with pretty much everything you said. It'll be interesting, because you're right, it is totally new, right? And one of the reasons the Wii succeeded is they differentiated themselves so well from the other consoles, right? So if they can market this appropriately, and it's like, hey, we're very cheap, you know, we enhance, or we sort of embrace people's creativity with open sourcing, and you know, there's still a lot of love for retro old school games. So yeah, I mean, it could be something here.
Yeah.
I actually am looking forward to see, I know there have been a lot of board game ports to Android and iDevices, and I'm curious to see if any of those are going to cross over. You probably don't need a console for those two, a controller for those too much, but hey, there are worse things to do with working on an open source thing.
But I mean, you know, even at minimum, if we get versions of all these mobile games that for some reason insist on using a virtual D-pad and buttons, with actual D-pad and buttons.
Which can't work. I hate the virtual key. Does anyone like the virtual?
No.
I don't even like it on my DS. I don't like when the DS makes me use a stylus as a control stick.
Yeah, like no. But I mean, so if we can just get actual controls and just those games, those games will be better. So I mean, I'll be okay with some of those for a while if that's enough for people to like get this system, or I don't know. You know, I'm happy having a Neo Geo Pocket Color. I'm happy with that library, so I have low standards.
You're realistic. Or optimistic.
I am.
Optimistically realistic.
Realistic. I guess you guys mentioned this in the spec, the last speculator, that their projected street date is March 2013.
Right.
And you guys are mostly pushing that back to April, I guess, was the consensus, which is, I'd accept that in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I would too. I want to part of me is really excited about it, then part of me is like, just please
take
have me end up with a product at some point.
Yeah, that would be nice. It would be bad for this to be the high profile Kickstarter disaster that some people really want it to be.
Yeah, and I don't think it'll be that. I think they're going to deliver something. We'll see if they have hardware glitches or something, but you know.
The control pads for some reason don't work. We're gonna have to add another month or two to develop.
Have everyone send back their control pads and yeah, but that's okay because the thing could just use USB things. So while you're waiting,
right,
you see any other
most of the complaints I've seen in the forums I hang out with are people saying this isn't doing anything my PC can't do.
It's
which
not.
A is true, and B, do you know how many people can't do that or don't know that they can do that with their PCs or don't want to do that?
Right.
My laptop has no reason to talk to my television.
I currently have my laptop connected to my television, but just having I love the console experience. I love the like not worrying about the headache of like whether I have the right specs or
right.
whether yeah. I have things hooked up correctly or whether I have the right drivers. Like yeah. just screw that. I plug it in.
I guess
then I get the game on it.
I guess there's a lot of variability in the current Android market. That different things have different systems.
Huge variability, yeah.
Right, but that's one of the other selling points they have for this. This is you have a known hardware,
And it's Tegra 3, which means that NVIDIA is going to give it some support, which is good because NVIDIA has definitely subsidized games that like I don't know if you guys have seen any of the things where like oh like this game is coming out exclusively for Tegra 3 systems like. Yeah, because NVIDIA is paying them a little bit. Like, it's nice and powerful, but also, like, they wanted a couple of showpieces. Like, I think the Android version of Sonic 4 Episode 2 was Tegra 3 only for a while or something like that. But, yeah, so having NVIDIA help them out may be just like, hey, NVIDIA may be able to, like, subsidize getting a couple high-profile games in there to start with, and then we can go from there. But, yeah. Anyway. I just hope something shows up.
Cool. What was the price point? $100?
$95? It's 99
99
for everyone but a special first 1,000.
Oh, okay.
I guess additional controls are 30,
which
shows
is
just how basic the software, like the hardware chipset and stuff is, and how complicated an actual control pad can be.
Yeah.
It's a third the price of the actual box.
Yeah. Anyway, I guess we should probably wrap up this episode.
Very cool.
Before we go, I want to help out our community manager, Brad, and let you know that you can help us out. And if you do, we can do more things. We can do better things. You can give us a review on iTunes. We've revamped that feed, and that's nice and, I'll say, functional now. But that would really help us out. As always, visit the site. Leave a comment. Share with your friends. Talk to us on Twitter at SBG Community, and our main feed is at Snack Bar Games. And you can always send us an email with news tips, feature suggestions, or if you just want to help us out, you can send an email to editors@snackbar-games.com. But that wraps up this episode. For Henry, Chris, and Chris, I'm Graham. See you next time.
Thanks for listening to the Snack Bar Games Podcast. Follow us on the web at snackbar-games.com or on Twitter
at Snack Bar Games.